It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. My main guest today is one of the world's greatest polar explorers. Dr. Mikhail Melnikov has skied to the North Pole 16 times, including an expedition in 1995, when he made it there and back unsupported. He received Russia's highest award for such an accomplishment as a Hero of the Russian Federation. But he's done much more than that and is in Alaska this summer to continue some remarkable treks. Melnikov is leading an expedition to retrace some of the greatest expeditions of Russian America, a project he's been working on since 2009. It's a great year for it as we mark the 150th anniversary of the Alaska Purchase, when Russia sold Alaska to the United States. And also with me today for the hour is Tim Troll, director of the Bristol Bay Heritage Land Trust, who is assisting Melnikov and has written about his exploits in the Anchorage Dispatch News, which we'll have linked on our website at outdoorexplorer.org. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Charles.
And welcome, Dr. Melnikov, for
being here. Thank you very much.
So, as we were talking before we began, you were saying that your dream of doing some of these great expeditions from the Russian-America period goes all the way back to childhood. This is not something that just popped into your head, but you've had your eye on Alaska for a long time. Tell me where you came from originally and how you got interested in Alaska.
Okay, I originally was born in Rizan area, and quite big city, more than 500,000 people. And Rizan is located approximately 100 miles southeast of Moscow. It means middle part of Russia. Mm-hmm. And actually very historical city, more than 900 years old. Huh. And that's why actually I always was interested in history. I was living in historical city. And always since my childhood knew that there is unique home here in just in the historical part of Rizan city. And one very interesting person with name Lavrentiy Zagoskin was living there second part of 19th century. Mm-hmm. And this man is very well known just because his exploration in Alaska that time before 1867, Alaska was a Russian colony. It was so-called Russian America. And I knew about it in my childhood. But for me, it was not very clear. And just take into consideration, yeah, it was Soviet time. Yeah. How it's possible to go even
easy
now,
yeah,
for Russians to Alaska? Because Alaska, 12 hours differences.
Yes.
We are living a little bit ahead of it. And I was watching on my watch and say, okay, it's 8 o'clock in the morning today, but in Alaska, 8 o'clock in the evening,
yeah,
yesterday.
It was the ice curtain, it wasn't
it
easy.
Was not very understandable for me, but I always I was touching sometimes with my hands this house, and I always was dreaming to travel to Alaska and to check what kind of job was done by Zagoskin, just normal human feelings. But mm-hmm, I was so busy for more than 30 years,
right,
to do different polar explorations.
Which we're going to talk about it later, about some of these amazing explorations you've done. But your history was a big
I did something. I did something very interesting for,
yeah,
me. I don't know, probably it's interesting for other people.
Yes, indeed.
No problem, we'll talk about it also. But going back to Zagoskin, mm-hmm, and 10 years ago, just it was like click in my head. I met people who are interested in Zagoskin, started to talk about it, and suddenly I realized, time to go and to check what kind of exploration did Mr. Zagoskin. His house still here, and unique house, just because he was a very important person, mm-hmm, in history of Russian America. Probably it's single house, mm-hmm, which left after such big people in history of Russian America. Now in other cities, nothing almost,
yeah,
left, but Zagoskin house still there.
And not much left in Alaska either, or even in the minds of Alaskans who easily think of exploration beginning after Americans got here. But what you have learned from your historical investigations and from your expeditions is that, wow, this was an amazing explorer. He covered a lot of Alaska very early.
In 2 years.
And you're retracing his steps.
And the original idea was just to visit, but question where exactly, what should we do there? What we can find. And I have very serious rule in my life. If I am starting a new project, something doing different, I'm originally a medical doctor. And I have a rule to ask most knowledgeable people in this subject. And I found who is the best historian here in about Russian history in Alaska. Professor from Moscow. Okay, I found this professor and met with him and asked him very simple question. What left after Alaska was sold in 1867? What left, about Russian heritage? And answer was very simple and very clear. Nothing. 150 years almost gone. What?
Everyone left, right? Yeah. All the Russians went back.
I said, okay, it's interesting. Okay, let's go and check your statement, yeah? And we started our preparation, and when we realized it's necessary to repeat his journey through Yukon River, you need to paddle every day 60 kilometers.
Wow.
I was traveling quite a lot on skis on surface of Arctic Ocean. I know it very well. But to paddle down Yukon River, greatest river in North America, probably in the world, and very famous. It's something new, and I have a good training and preparation, and we start to prepare, find people, of course, and money in order to realize this project. It took for us 1 year serious training, preparation, in order to reach level 60 kilometers per day, in order to repeat journey of Lavrenty Zagoskin.
Wow. So those guys were tough.
Young and tough people. And besides it, they were very well motivated just to realize actually how it could happen 2 years ago. Man who was living with us could make such journey having no proper equipment, no proper food. And sometimes local people were not very friendly with him. And he was not killed, he was not eaten. And people probably will have good memory about this person. And so the idea was born, and the question was when we can start it. And we start this project in 2009.
Okay. And Tim, you met Mikhail in 2011, roughly 2 years later. And I'm really grateful that you introduced him to me, and you guys are still friends. Tell me how you sort of heard about this Russian expedition going on in Alaska.
Well, first of all, I had lived in the Dillingham area, and I had read read Zagoskin and some of the other journals. But I was living in Anchorage at the time. I got a call from friends in Kalligonik who knew that I was interested in the history of the Bristol Bay region and wanted to know about a portage between the Nooshigak and the Kuskokwim that was pioneered by the Russians for their fur trade. At that point, there was the first fort in Western Alaska was built at Nooshigak in 1818. And I said to my friend, well, I don't know if it's used anymore. I've never been there. Why are you asking? And they said, well, there's all these Russians have just come into town, and they just paddled up from from Dillingham? Yes.
That's a long way, right?
It's a long, but upriver.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know anybody that's done that in a long time. And I said, I didn't know. And then he put Misha on the phone, and we talked. I said, I was very fascinated, and he mentioned Zagoskin, and immediately I knew what trip he was trying to retrace, and was amazed to find out, one, that he'd already been here 2 years, and nobody in Alaska knew this guy from Russia was doing this stuff,
right,
and recovering our history as well as their history.
Right.
So I tried to convince him to let me charter an airplane so he could fly and see the area. And no, I have to go. I have to see it the way Zagoskin saw it. Or not Zagoskin, but in this case, Vasiliev. And I said, well, let me know how I can help. And lo and behold, they went. They found it. And he can describe that journey. It's pretty amazing. And then we met up at the end of his journey, which was in Russian mission on the Yukon. And since then, we've been friends. And I try to, because I'm learning a lot about our Alaskan history through a Russian man who's trying to learn about their history at the same time.
Well, Tim mentioned Russian mission, and as I think about it, I can think of all these Russian names, and I can think of all these Russian Orthodox churches that I've seen in villages. It's really not true that Russian heritage disappeared from Alaska, is it? I mean, Have you been surprised or interested to find signs of Russian heritage here in Alaska?
Yeah, of course. When we just visited the first village on Yukon River, Tanana village, mm-hmm. and when we saw old ladies, and they look very much like Russian old ladies, when we saw Orthodox churches, when we saw cemeteries with crosses and Russian names on these crosses, and I realized, my dear professor from Moscow, you are... You're a knowledgeable person, but you know nothing about heritage of Russian culture here in Alaska. And people much wiser, normal people than sometimes scientists, because they're using useful things for them. It means local people having and living in hard condition. Of course, they used the best experience, which was brought by Russians, промышленники and explorers the time, and you keep it. In their memory, in their life, it's getting already part of their life. And for me, was like a small discovery, and we realized mm-hmm. it's not probably our last expedition, first, but not last one. After Yukon, there is Kuskokwim and other place, and we need to know more and to collect full information about what left after Russia, because it's not just interest, but it's very useful for mm-hmm. Russians to know what kind of things they have brought to this territory mm-hmm. and how local people, native people, first of all, keep memory about Russian period of their history, and how we can use it for our modern life. It's useful things, and actually project of Russian America starting from idea mm-hmm. just to see places which were discovered by Zagoskin. After it, we started a project with name Heritage of Russian America. And that's why since that time we visited actually 14,000 kilometers, 9 different expeditions, almost all places.
That's how much you've done so far?
Since 1909. And every year it was new idea. Every year it was something different. Every year it was that scientific research meeting with special people, talking with our friends in Alaska, and the numbers getting more and more, more supporters. And actually,
you covered much more of Alaska than almost anybody here has.
Yeah. I don't want to be not modest person, but if you're asking, I can say, it seems to me we saw in Alaska and Aleutian Islands more than many, all of Russians, and more
almost
than many Americans, because just to travel through Aleutian Islands from Kodiak Island until closest one for Russia, Attu Island, and to make the 60 landings on this way,
wow.
I think it's unique experience. Actually, Tim, I didn't tell you before. During this voyage through Aleutian Islands, we decided, okay, we should collect some plants.
I want to hear more of this story, but I have to tell the listeners who we're talking to. Dr. Mikhail Malakoff is a remarkable explorer. He's been to the North Pole numerous times, and he's on this 8 or 9 year, or however long it will be, exploration in Alaska, retracing the steps of these extraordinary Russian-American explorers who were here more than 150 years ago. And his friend Tim Troll, who introduced me to him, is here too. And the show is Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. I didn't realize you'd... How did you go through the Aleutians? Kayak? Boat?
Actually, it was an interesting idea. First of all, when I started to ask what's an interesting place we should visit on Aleutians, and I realized not many people informed where were Russian camps and villages, hotels on these Aleutian Isles. And I had to find history reports and reports of Russian explorers, 18th, 19th centuries, who did voyages through Aleutian Islands. And then I used modern map and satellite images of this place in order to find something strange, which probably looks like old village, old remains. We made a plan, but it was very difficult to realize this land.
Yes.
Why? Because we realized, okay, it should be the same size of boat, 17, 18 meters, sailboat, motor and sailboat. But we found that not so many sailboats exist on Alaska at this time.
No.
And we need to use motorboat. It's much more expensive and not like it was 200 years ago.
Yeah.
And we found in French Polynesia one yacht with name Savage. And owner and captain of this yacht, Didier Waterlot, is probably one of not so numerous captains of such sailboats who has experience to be only one time somewhere in area of Unalashka. And we decided to invite this person to make a suggestion to him to use his
And he was in
yacht.
French Polynesia at the time?
Yeah, and he did arrive especially to Kodiak in order to start a 2 months voyage with us, with many landings. And it was amazing. Johnny, and there, that time, I decided, okay, I need to have something in my hands to show people. And we decided to collect plants, special plants and herbs to make special collection. And we did it. During each landing, we had special instructions from botanics and other scientific people how we can do it. We made big preparation training, and after it, during each landing, we started to collect it. And for several years, when we brought it to Russia, people, specialists, could not recognize what is this. And just 1 month before our departure for this expedition this year, suddenly I have an answer from Moscow University. And they said, okay, your job is done already, your project is finished, and we recognize all these plants, and we have now a unique collection from whole Aleutian Islands plants, which you can find there. It's for sure not so many people have it at this moment.
It's wonderful from our point of view. You know, we're here in
Alaska.
But for us,
most amazing things.
And you're learning about us. You're exploring Alaska. We don't think of ourselves as being explored. We think of ourselves as explorers. But
listen, Charles, we are, when we realize that we need to find this information and who can do it, Russian history of Alaska. Yeah, of course, it's probably easier to do it for Russians, but together with Americans. Because what we are doing actually, we are doing not only for our image or for our pride. It's interesting, of course, and we did already job in order to make name of Zagoskin very well known our country. Now there is a museum in his house. And but for me, it was interesting also to tell the story about people who live in Alaska.
The connection between our people.
Yeah, and that's why I'm very thankful for such people like Tim Troll, Ken Acton, Ken Pratt, Peter Richter, people who support us all the time. And they're arranging our meetings, they're writing articles about us, telling Alaskan people what wonderful land do they have. And but this land requests responsibility from these people. We all, Americans and Russians, are responsible for our history. And after such numerous expedition in Alaska, I can tell you exactly. Now I understand why. During our 200 years official relations between Russian Empire and now Russian Federation, United States of America, never was real hot war.
Yeah,
it was Cold War when it was just great misunderstanding between two great countries. But in real things, during real world trouble, Russia and America worked all the time together.
Mm-hmm.
And it means, and I understand now why, because we have joined history. And this history in blood of your native people. And I'm saying to you, it's not my words. When we met first people in first our villages in inner part of Alaska, and we heard from them, guys, we can see first Russian in our life. And I'm very proud that there is Russian blood in my body. No more explanation why we should work together.
Yes.
No more any discussion how we can do or solve problems. We should solve our own problem and world problem together.
Let me talk to Tim about this, because you've hosted and helped out these expeditions. Why? How did this touch you? How did it touch your heart? And what is your sort of, why have you wanted to be part of this?
Well, I had back in when the sort of ice curtain was briefly down, had the opportunity to visit Chukotka and Providenia to work with some native people. and had the same feelings at the time that why are we separated by this political stuff? Mm-hmm. And of course, all of that is sort of gone now. That thawing that had occurred briefly, and then I had never thought about it again until other than reading the Russian history, mm-hmm. until I got the phone call from Mikhail or Misha. And the way I kind of describe this to people is the first Russian expeditions into Bristol Bay, Western Alaska, were in 1818.
Long time ago.
So, long time ago, yeah. But only 10 years after Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, yeah, isn't that amazing?
So if you think of Lewis and Clark coming back today, and at that time, Korsakovsky and Kolmogorov coming back today, who would be more amazed? Kolmogorov, that everything is still pretty much the same? Or Lewis and Clark, to see what's so different? So he's kind of like the Korsakovsky and the Kolmogorov. He's coming back to see, and he can see it the way they did because so little has really changed.
Yeah.
And I think that's remarkable.
It is magnificent, isn't it? And it gives us an opportunity to see our state with new eyes. We haven't seen it with these eyes before. My guests, Tim Troll, an Alaskan, and Mikhail Malakoff, a Russian who has been re-exploring Alaska along the path of these Russian-American explorers. Have you gained a new appreciation for those who went before and who first did these explorations? Because these seem like very, very challenging trips you're doing, sailing through the Aleutians, paddling upwards on a fairly fast-moving river. Maybe you could talk about some of the other really challenging and difficult things that you've had to do in order to recreate their trips.
Actually, physically for me, after my expedition to the North Pole and Arctic Ocean in other different areas, of course, summer expedition, they don't look
it's much more
too
pleasant.
Extreme. But still, it's not nice to be wet 24 hours per day and to go inside of your sleeping bag completely wet. No. But it's still warm. And for me, sometimes you need to change inside yourself just in order to understand better psychology of people who discovered this territory and survived here together with native many years ago. For example, I'm a medical doctor, and I'm agnostic, so-called. But one day I realized that there is one person who can join our countries, and this is first sent of Orthodox Church in whole North America, Saint Herman, who was born in Rязань area. And we visited a lot of Orthodox churches mm-hmm. during our expedition, probably more than 40. Some of them have a name of Saint Herman. And everywhere we saw icons with his face. And when I started to be interested, who this person, what's his story, and suddenly I realized this person born from Rязань area.
Oh, he's from your area.
And it was just parallel geographical investigation. Zagoskin, probably one of most interesting person, is Saint Herman, first saint in North America. Uh-huh. I said, that's another story we need to start to learn. Yeah, and we started a project to look places where did he work, and we made last year journey around Kodiak Island. We visited Spruce Island when Saint Herman was living and where he died, and we saw his remains on Kodiak Island. And then we visit place where he was born, mm-hmm. and we applied, and we see nature very similar. And for me, it was clear why this person was born in very similar. There are some similar landscapes, a lot of spruce also in that area. And I realized that we need to join people, and mm-hmm. we started a three-year project to make special pilgrims and tourist center in Kadam in order to show people what kind of person was born here, and for my Americans give a chance to who like St. Herman and who visiting Orthodox Church to go to this place where this unusual person was born. And now we are in process of this project, and some Americans did visit already Kadam, Rязань area, mm-hmm. where St. Herman was born. And Russians come in also to visit, people from Rязань visit Spruce Island. And we were just talking about exchange of students and other things. Exactly what it should happen. We should work together using our history. And for me as a doctor, I'm not visiting quite often Orthodox Church, but for me, it's important this history request from us. Don't forget about this real stories. They should help you in a modern line. And that's why we started this project. It's going well at this moment. And hopefully in 2 years time, when we need to finish this project, we'll have, as usual, very good, very useful for people.
Finish a 10-year project. So tell us that we're going to take a break in a moment and talk about your Arctic explorations. But tell us what you're planning to do this summer. What is your goal this summer?
Oh, it's unusual things, and sometimes finishing one expedition, you don't know exactly what you are going to do next year. But this year of project we know many years ago we should do. First of all, it's a story about Russians on Hawaii. Because Hawaii, it was part of history of Russian America. Baranov wanted... in the beginning of 19th century, wanted to have base agriculture, farm, base for ships there to start trade with local rulers. And actually, he succeeded the time, but for some reason, Russian forts, three forts were built there. Actually, were destroyed, and not so many, unfortunately, people know about this story, about work of Dr. Schaeffer, representative of Russian-American company, and about Russians' discovery on Hawaiian island. Even our friends here in Alaska, who are interested in the history of Russian America, know not so many things about
Hawaii, all the way down to California.
Yeah, about Hawaii. Yeah. And for me, important that Russians basically did very well with local people. Like during Russian time, and I wouldn't say it was a bloody story. No, it was normal human story. And we would like to visit on Hawaii places connected with Russian history, with our explorers and sailors who did visit these places. And places were were investigated by Dr. Schaeffer to see places where Russian forts were constructed, what's left there. We'll try to find people who are interested in such stories. And we would like to make a documentary about these things. Okay. And afterwards, after nice Hawaii.
So they're going to Hawaii. Before, that's their next trip.
You get to Hawaii, get some sun, look at these historical sites, and then back to Alaska.
To be honest, I'm not going to look for the sun. I'm a polar explorer, yeah. I'm going to look for historical Russian places on Hawaii. And after
the sun will probably find you, though.
And the sun will find us, and hopefully we'll find place to hide for to be out of sun, somewhere in shadow, yeah.
So they should be coming to Dillingham around the 18th with good suntans.
And for me, a very important note, color of my skin, just to be very healthy. But I heard Hawaiian, it's a very healthy place.
So we'll then see. What do you do in Dillingham?
Yeah, and we are going to finish our several-year project to search or to repeat journeys through portages, which were, of course, native portages, but which were used by Russians during Russian-America time as a way of transportation to inner part of Alaska from sea shore and the other way around. The point is that Russia has the same territory, and when we didn't have any planes or big boats. People had to carry their stuff using rivers, lakes, or overland portages. And we knew about several such most important portages in Alaska, which were used by Russians, and you'd like to compare with portages in northern Russian territories. But first of all, to visit all these portages and to repeat such type of journey. Believe me, it most physical challenge, most interesting, and
bushes,
because there is not so many description where people did go. That's
finding
why
mm-hmm.
advices from such experienced people как, like Tim Trollk and Act and Peter Richter and Ken Pratt. Mm-hmm. It's important for us to understand the real story. And for me, it's quite interesting and most important that our friends Tim Troll and Ken Acton will join us.
Oh,
second part of this journey. We hope. Uh-huh. They promised us. Yeah.
Their plan is to start in Dillingham or Nooshinggak and go up through the Wood-Tikchik State Park.
Mm-hmm.
And portage over from Kulik Lake, which is the top of the Wood River system, into Nuyukuk Lake. And then they'll travel up the Tikchik River. If for any of you have been there, you'll know that country. And all the way up to the uppermost lake of the Wood-Tikchik State Park, which is Nishlik Lake. And from there, you want to find a portage through the mountains to the Aniak River. And then flow down the Aniak. Then they'll be finally going with the current.
Wow.
And come out at Aniak, not far from where Komakovsky Redoubt was established by Komakov back in the 1830s. I'm joining them on the Aniak River.
You're going to go downriver.
We're going to go downriver, and we're going to be in Cataracs. And we hope to meet some Russians along the way. And to congratulate them on their tough journey.
That sounds like quite a journey. Yeah,
yeah, but I would say to you, Charles, that again, we have some discussion with Tim and his friends. Where should we start our this year journey? He said, okay, guys, I will drop you to nearest lake by car because there is very
and
good
we're
base.
We're trying to still resolve
but
that.
But my reason, like it was in 2011 when he wanted to help us, and he was ready to pay for our recon plane to find the proper way. We decided to start from place where Russian or Vasily started his journey on former Novoalexandrovsky Redoubt on left bank of Nushakak River, not right bank. And Tim, who is worried a little bit about us, wants to drop. But we said, no, we should take this risk in order to do proper job.
I'm not worried about him because when I learned of his polar exploits, and finally read his book, Polar Attack, there's no question that he can do it. I just worry about logistics, and I made the point to them, if there was a road from Dillingham to Lake Alechnagek and Vasilyev knew about that, he would have taken it.
He would have taken it. We're going to have to take a break, gentlemen. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guests are Dr. Mikhail Malakoff and Tim Troll. We're talking about these amazing journeys to retrace Russian-American explorations. In the second half, we're going to talk about some of Dr. Malakoff's Arctic explorations. Tim mentioned the book Arctic Attack, Polar Attack, which he co-authored with Richard Weber, and lots to hear about in the second half. So please stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and today we're talking with one of the world's great polar explorers, Dr. Mikhail Malakoff. In the first half, we talked about his explorations here in Alaska, which are retracing some historic routes of Russian America. And in this half, I want to talk about his record of work in the polar ice cap, going to the North Pole, which he has done many times. Tim Troll is also in the studio with me. He's Dr. Malakoff's friend who introduced us, and really glad that he brought him in to be on the show today. Your book, Polar Attack, I believe talks about the 1995 expedition you made to the North Pole on foot, unsupported, and back. And I've talked to other explorers who've been to the North Pole, Even those who've done it unsupported, which is an extraordinary achievement, I've never heard of anyone going all the way there and going back. Is that an accomplishment that's ever been repeated, or are you and your companion the only one who have ever been able to do it?
And after 1995 expedition, myself and Richard Weber, my Canadian friend and partner, I'm just surprised that this attempt to go from land to the North Pole and back completely unsupported and without any help from additional parties. Nobody didn't try to do it and not repeat, but even didn't try to do it. And for me, it's just nice to hear, but at the same time, I'm a little bit surprised. But I would say to you, it was probably the toughest journey in my life. And we spent 6 years of preparation. Because what does mean to go 2,000 kilometers of drifting ice of Arctic Ocean? When we just started to collect what in reality it means, and we found that using average speed and using the best equipment and we need to carry with us almost even more than 500 pounds,
wow.
230 kilograms per person. And our average speed should be approximately 20 kilometers, 12, 13 miles, nautical miles per day without any rest days.
Oh.
And for me, it was, I didn't think about any record.
Well, and I've spent some time in the Arctic, and one might think of it's flat like a lake. No, there's pressure ridges everywhere. There's not, you don't get to just zoom along, right? I mean, it's like going over rough terrain.
Exactly. I would say to you, having such big experience to travel Arctic Ocean, and I understand why I am doing it, and I can explain why I'm not trying to go to the Everest. Yeah. And first of all, not so many people, even during modern time, traveling to the North Pole.
Yeah.
But if you calculate how many people every year trying to climb Everest, impossible to compare. One, two, three, five people per year, even not every year, trying to reach North Pole, and hundreds of people trying to go on the top of
yes.
Everest. And question about what the most difficult way to travel, I would answer for sure. Drifting ice of Arctic
yes.
Ocean. Not Antarctic ice, but drifting ice of Arctic Ocean. Pressure ridges moving all the time, and even you don't understand where ice will move you.
Which can be 100 feet high.
Pressure ridges not so big. 3, 4, 5 meters, 2 meters. And now when number of ice is reducing just because
warming.
Several warmer years. But it doesn't mean it's getting better. And major problem, of course, pressure ridges. It means you can't go straight line. You need to do all the time detours and approximately 25-30% straight line and rail. Your way is longer, yeah? And for me, this journey was interesting not just to be hero of Russia, not just to beat any record. I'm not like such words. I'm not doing it for fame. For me, it was interesting because I'm a medical doctor and realized to carry 230 kilograms per person within 123 days, it's just an experiment.
It's a limit of human capability.
And you don't know, as a medical doctor, you know what will happen with your body. In order to do this job, you need to digest 7,000 calories.
Which
7,000 calories.
Right. How do you, like...
It means you should have very fatty food, and your body should digest this amount of fat, which is probably 50% more than normal request to have fat in your everyday diet.
So,
yeah.
So I've heard you, some people eat sticks of butter. They just do anything.
But
to
you
bring
can
up.
Eat only butter. Yes. You will not digest, or your liver and other intestine will not digest such thing. Mm-hmm. For me, it was serious medical experiment. Yeah. I was interested in having already two successful expedition, polar bridge expedition from Russian side through North Pole to Canadian coast, and then expedition from northern tip of Canada under flag of United Nations to the North Pole. I was not interested as explorers to go through this drifting ice. I knew this territory very well. For me, it was more interesting just to realize, is it possible, having no any aid from outside, to do this job? And story which was written by Cook and Peary, American explorers in the beginning of 20th centuries, and many historians are in serious doubt, did they do it or no, having dogs and supported team.
Well, Cook and was known to be a fraud, and but people still believed in Peary.
But historians don't believe, and that's why Amundsen and other famous world explorers tried to repeat again in the beginning of 19th century this journey. I didn't argue with these people. I knew if you will do expedition without any dog, just ourselves, it will be something different. Forgot about Cook, forgot about Peary, great explorers, but they did different expedition, and it's already business of historian to argue about it. Mm-hmm. My job just to do this expedition,
show if it's possible.
No help.
Can I ask a question about your food? Because I'm thinking about 7,000 calories a day, three times more than someone would eat, even just who is a hearty person. What sort of food did you eat, and how did you get food that would be compact enough that you could carry it all the way to the North Pole, that would give you that many calories?
I would say to you, it's disgusting food. For normal life, it's discounting food, 17 different items, and it's very fatty, dehydrated, I would say to you, pasta, rice. And dry meat, and a lot of butter, and actually nuts from Hawaii Island, macadamia nuts, very rich and specially made for us in Vancouver.
You have to eat huge helpings, enormous amounts of
this. Yeah, and besides it, you need to teach your body to digest this. You need to find a way how it's possible to digest it and to use it. And besides it, we had to find how many times we should eat and what in the beginning, what in the end. And we need to create just new style of life. Besides food, it's a new type of equipment. We, in order to do job when you spend every day 7,000 calories, it means no extra job. It means nothing should be wrong.
Take
nothing
it easy,
should
right.
be broken. Your equipment should be perfect. And we spent so many years creating our, designing our equipment, testing it with scientists. We slept in special cameras, cold cameras, in our sleeping bags, trying to understand what the best to work them, because they can evaporate a lot of water, and they get in ice in already in several days, and we had to create new type of boot, because your feet is very important, and it was, for me, it was serious scientific job.
Yes.
We created system how people can survive on this hard conditions when the temperature is minus 60 degrees Celsius.
It's incredible.
And when you have to carry such huge weight with certain amount of miles every day, and no opportunities to be resupplied. And besides, it's a risky way. Even we had to refuse our radio, no radio communication at the time, no satellite. We had to create special communication system, and we invited specialists from Berlin. They made for us special devices to send normal messages through special device. And we had our satellite to send short message, 60 symbols only.
Oh, wow.
Everything is good, our position.
Symbols.
And that's all. We didn't want to listen to voice of other people because they had nice life in normal condition. But
and we were suffering.
No, we were not suffering. We did our job. We were ready psychologically. We were ready for such a special job for months outside of rest war. War had one life. We had completely different life, not understandable. And we didn't want even to hear voices of other people because it's emotion. We were just machine to make miles, kilometers, and to digest 7,000 calories,
right.
Making no mistake, going as straight as possible. And very important, we should be very good friends and support of each other. And my probably what I'm happy, not just because we did everything, no one even mistake, but we never said one word anger in each of other. We were very good friends. We were like one machine.
You remained good friends.
Yeah, one machine to make these kilometers. And after it, when we did this journey, I realized for me nothing to do Iraqi caution. I need to think about something different.
Yeah.
Actually, it was a good base to make. Actually, what we did, one word. In the end of 20th century, history is like a written book. And in the beginning of 19th century, couple pages were still white, not written. Could people go to the North Pole and back using their own human resources? And what we did, we just turned this, we just filled this missed white pages of history in the beginning of 20th century, but we did it, we filled them in the end of this century. And we created a system how people can survive in such hard conditions. And it means very important things. Mm-hmm. Now time in Arctic Ocean, not to make any records or just only scientific investigation. Now time to make a normal life, normal economic life there in Arctic Ocean. This area, just because knowledge of people, including our experience, it's already prepared area for normal human activities.
Yes.
Finish.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guest is Dr. Mikhail Malakoff. Tim Troll is with us, although not saying too much about
this part
of the story. this journey you made to the North Pole and back, unsupported, on foot, with these 500-pound, I suppose, sleds that you were pulling your equipment and your food. You must have encountered some severe hazards, like open water, like wildlife, like extreme cold. I mean, what were the hazards that you came upon or incidents that you ran into that you, at times might have made you think you might not make it?
Okay, please repeat your question.
Hazards, dangers, the open water, the things that were the largest threat to your success.
To be honest, we was not worried about open water. We knew how it's possible to cross. We didn't were worried about climbing through pressure ridges. We are good climbers, and we had very good training. And we were worried about our psychological situation. The point is that in these hard conditions, you can't sleep properly, because whole situation very dangerous. Any moment ice can crack, and we went through such experience during our previous expeditions when you can fall in your sleeping bag just into
water. Gosh, that's terrifying.
Or pressure ridges. Usually you trying to find a good place for camping near pressure ridges, protection against wind. And they can start to move any moment, and they can just crush you with your tent. What happened actually with great climbers, Reinhold Messer, who wanted at the same year as us, wanted to go to the North Pole from Russian side. In 3 days time, not proper way to arrange your camp, and pressure ridges just crushed his sledges and all his equipment. He had to be evacuated by helicopter. And
this is
for
in,
us
the, in the record of the native people. They have records of people being killed that way. They call it Ivu in the Inupiaq language when the pressure ridges come together and people are crushed. So very dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And for us was important psychological situation. We should work like one team. And besides, you should sleep properly about 8 hours per day. But day for us was not unusual. We had 30 in average. We had day, not 24 hours, 30 hours. And it was enough 7,000 calories in order to survive this circle for 30 hours. And besides, it's polar day. We started during polar night. Our day became 23 hours. during darkness, but when it's polar day, you can have day 30 hours. It's already our style, and we had to have very good rest in order to be ready for next day. But if you are not able to sleep properly, you can't survive. You can be crushed. Your body can be crushed. One problem, and of course, second problem, when you spend so much time in Arctic Ocean and you don't have rail confirmation that you are going towards your final goal land, small Vorhan Island, but every day, 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month, 3 months, you can see only pressure ridges and ice, and suddenly you realize, but where I am going? It's like flight on using only equipment on airplane.
Yeah.
You don't understand where is land. The same we couldn't see. And one day your body just refused to believe that you are going the right way. Probably you go in parallel with this land.
Yeah.
And you need to have real confirmation what's happened. In such situation, very difficult psychologically, you need to believe in your plan.
Yes.
Yeah, and everything. That's why.
Because otherwise, you could go
nowhere.
Off the wrong way. Yeah.
And if you are making just only one mistake, and you, of course, people will try to help you, will fly by airplane or helicopter, but bad weather and moving ice, pressure ridges, probably they never will find you. Mm-hmm. It was quite risky project, and we realized no rights for mistake, and and you need to believe in your plan. And to believe, you need to be very well prepared, and you very, very well prepared physically, psychologically, and this is actually a unique experience. And besides that, very important, belief of people who help with us and our families that we can do it. I'm very thankful for our sponsor in Canada, who even before our start, who made special memorial sign, and they said, guys, this is memorial sign. We believe you are able to do it. And we made it already. We spent money. And when you will finish, we will bring it. We will fly and we'll bring it and we'll put it on Vorhan Island. I'm happy to say that this memorial stays there. They made mistake in dates. But they didn't mistake to invest money in a very good project. It's still there.
Tell me about the navigation. Did you GPS? And when you got to the North Pole, there's nothing there, right? I mean, you got to the North Pole, and do you feel like the same sense of accomplishment you'd feel at the top of a mountain, or do you sort of also think, oh, we're only halfway there, we've got to walk all the way back? I mean, tell me about the navigation and also just the emotions associated with getting there.
No, of course, we used the GPS, which was very reliable system that time. But GPS, you can see your position yourself, but you need to inform rest world, and we knew many people who did follow our project, and they had to have real proof that we started from this place, we reached North Pole, and then we came the same place back. And that's why we had to have another system to send signal to this world Argus system, and independent people verify our real position. And we had to carry this extra additional food equipment in order to send signal during our start, North Pole, and finish. And when we did arrive, we had call from National Geographic magazine, and they wanted to know, actually, did you do it? Is there a proof of it? And we sent them information from the system saying, listen, we did it. And of course, we didn't argue about achievement, Cook and Peary. We did our own expedition.
Yeah.
It's already business of other people did who was first. We did our job, and we are doing another project. But
was it easier to get back than to get there because you had less weight to pull? Or?
There is no days easier or harder. Every day was very hard and very dangerous. But I would like to finish this story with support of our families. For us, it's very important to keep them informed and to feel that they believe that everything is going well with us. Basically, we took this satellite system in order to inform our families and our supporters. Everything is going well, and that's why we have so many good supports and friends even 22 years after this project.
It's fabulous. I'm interested in just a few minutes we have left. Do you find that Russians people are interested in Alaska when you go, when you lecture or you bring back the information you've gotten from Alaska? Is there still a fascination with Alaska over there in Russia, as there is, I think, a fascination with Russia here in Alaska?
No, I would say to you, we have many lecturers after our expedition, exhibition. There is special museum telling about history of Russian America, probably unique museum on territory on Russian Federation. And we can see reaction of normal people, not authorities, normal people. Everybody is interested in knowing something new about their own history. And for Russia, it's very good history because we were, I mean, Russians 200 years ago, they were, they worked in very good cooperation with the natives. And of course, there were some conflicts.
But at the beginning, it was bad, but it got much better, didn't
it? But it's not bloody story. Yeah. It's just bloody of joint survival in hard conditions, helping of each other. That's why for us just mission to tell these great examples from history for people in Russia and in Alaska. This is our mission. And besides that, very important things also. I didn't know this fact before I started this project. Alaska was sold for $7,200,000. How Russians did spend this money? Not they didn't steal it in accordance with corruption, and all the Russian tradition. Actually, corruption is everywhere. Yeah, but money were invested in very good projects to build rail stage, railways. Huge country.
Yeah,
huge country.
I never knew that. I never knew what
and
they did with the
this railways between Moscow and Rязань and down south from Rязань was built. You that money from sale of Alaska were used for it. That means history just gave us a mission to just to give something back out of this investment.
That's great. Well, I you're not getting it back. So we're not.
No. To be honest, I'm, when we can see happy faces here in Alaska, and when we have such great opinion about things what we are doing, and I can see confirmation every my day staying here in state Alaska, and even today we had a call about articles will come back to Alaska. Let's do something together. Great, I'm very thankful for people in Alaska, people who keep a good memory about their Russian part of history and who would like to make this relation stronger. Even sometimes political things a little bit different. Forget about
politics. We'll leave that out. We've got to finish, and I want to thank you very much, Dr. Mikhail Malakhov. Been to the North Pole many times as he was talking and is now exploring these Russian-American paths through Alaska. And Tim Troll, thank you for introducing me to Mikhail. Thanks for being here.
You bet, you're welcome.
And good luck on your journeys.
Thank you very much.
That's all for our show today. Our producer is Eric Bork. Our assistant producer is Hannah Durrow. My name is Charles Wolfworth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.